We're back with Attitude Adjustment at AirVenture 2018. My guests here today are people who are very dear to my heart because I've been following their story for a couple of years. I hope you don't mind. I hope that doesn't spook you. We have a lot of things in common. So I have Tim Olson, who has a tremendous resource website called myrv10.com. And Tim and I ended up in the throes of building for years. And Andrea and I have a very similar story because I didn't build my airplane. I helped build the airplane. Andrea is Tim's wife, in case you don't know, around the same time. And then they have two beautiful daughters, Colleen and Danielle. And I have two beautiful daughters who are just a little bit older than you guys. I want to welcome you to this show. They've also got a tremendous story because you don't have just one RV-10 now. You've got like a whole stable of airplanes. Tell me a little bit about it, Tim.
I don't know if I'd call it a whole stable, but we do have an RV-10 and an RV-14 that we just finished. We finished the RV-10 in 2006, and 10 years later, 2016, we finished the RV-14.
Wow. What was the difference? Were there significant differences in the building techniques over that time period, materials? And
I didn't really find that there was a big difference in building them. The RV-14 kit was a little bit easier as far as more preparation was done for you, but otherwise they were really, really similar. Things like building the wings took about the same amount of time. It really wasn't a lot different, actually.
All right. Well, that is exciting news because I know that it was an interesting build for us as well. We took a little bit longer, 2008. And somewhere along the way, you guys started to doing an amazing amount of travel. And then you, Andrea, decided to learn to fly. What was going on there?
We were flying around as a family, you know, the two kids in the back, mom and dad up front, and knowing that if something were to happen to Tim, I wanted to be able to safely get the kids and myself down. So Tim encouraged me to go ahead and get my license. Well, it started off just, you know, learn how to land the plane. But he said, if you want to keep going with it, go ahead. And, you know, I did get that point of wanting to get it, you know, fully fledged pilot license. And so that's what we went ahead and did.
Fantastic. How long did it take you?
I started lessons in March and I finished in November of 2009.
Did it feel overwhelming at any point?
No, because I kept a pace what worked with the schedule of having two kids and everything, and Tim really helped out in terms of, you know, knowing that my priority was lessons, flight time, studying, so he helped out with that.
Wow. And then Danielle decided she wanted to learn to fly. What happened there? What inspired you?
On trips I would get to sit up front a lot when I got older. And I had so much fun flying the boxes on the Chelton and just being up front flying. And so I was about 14 or so, and I started asking Dad questions about, can I fly this? Can I do this? And he started teaching me, and pretty soon I could land. And then we had to wait some time because I wasn't old enough, but we got a few lessons in from an instructor, and more time went by, and finally, after Dad got his instructor license, we really hit it hard and I learned a lot. And then I was able to solo on my 16th birthday, which was my goal. And a year later, I was able to pass my test on my birthday.
Oh, that's fabulous. See, we have a tremendous amount in common because that's kind of what happened to me. My dad let me sit up front a lot when we flew. A lot. And I really liked, even when I was so small that I couldn't see out the front over the instrument panel, I really liked just being in control, you know? That there was something very cool going on there. So you're going to pursue your instrument rating? What are you thinking?
I'd like to, for sure. It definitely is helpful, especially with the weather we had this past weekend.
Yeah.
It would have been nice to have my instrument rating, but I think I'll wait a short time after getting out of high school because it is kind of hard with homework and everything in school to do that.
It really is. In fact, I probably put 2 years into it, so I was already in college when I finished my instrument rating because of just what you're saying. And one thing I can tell you is that if you get an instrument rating, pretty much all your ratings through your airline transport are going to be, wow, that instrument rating was harder. Seriously. I mean, it's a huge step to master. And once you get there, though, you feel like you really understand the system that we fly in. Would you not agree, Tim?
Oh, I'd agree totally. In fact, I think you should start an instrument rating, you know, maybe at least within 100 hours of starting after your private pilot, because there's a point where when you start your instrument training that you still are maybe questionable on some of your skills just handling the airplane, and maybe you're nervous about it. But once you start focusing on reading charts and navigating and doing all the things for your instrument rating, the rest of it just starts to come naturally, because it's not part of what you're focusing on. It's part of what you just do in the background automatically. So it builds, you know, more of just a natural function and feel for how to fly the airplane when you're already focusing on something else at the time.
Let's talk a little bit about training in a technically advanced airplane, because that's kind of what happened here. How is that different than anything else?
Really, the biggest thing is, you know, if you're learning in a Cessna 152 or a 172, you're going to spend a long time on your takeoff roll, and it's going to climb out slow, and you're going to have some time to think in the pattern, and that makes it easier to start. For sure, if you learn in a technically advanced airplane, especially an RV that has, you know, the one she learned in was 210 horsepower, and the RV-10 was 260 horsepower. If you're going to fly something like that, you're not going to get a lot of time to think. Once you hit that throttle, you're going to be turning crosswind in just a few seconds, and you're going to be on downwind a few seconds later. You don't get that much time. So it's like drinking from a fire hose. I think it makes it harder to start, and I wasn't convinced at first that it would be a good way to learn. But at the same time, I think it might take you a few more hours to really get in the swing of it. But once you drink from that fire hose, if you can do it without tearing your lips off, it just gets a little bit easier. So, you know, I think that in the end, when it comes to doing the whole private pilot certificate, it does slow you down a little bit in getting started. But I think having that experience all the way through, it makes you really be able to handle a faster plane that has more performance and more gizmos in it than if you just started out with an older plane that's slower.
What do you think about that, Danielle?
Yeah, I agree. And for me, starting to learn in a faster plane wasn't that difficult because it's all I knew. I only had about 5 hours in a Cessna, so all my training has been in the RV-14 or RV-10. So I'm just used to the high performance and the speed and everything that comes along with it.
What are you thinking you want to do with this at some point?
I think it'll mostly be just a hobby and traveling with my family when I'm older. But I don't know. I'm still open to the idea of becoming air traffic controller or something like that.
Well, you would be awfully good as an air traffic controller given where you're coming from. Pilots make very good air traffic controllers if they also have that spatial awareness of where everybody else is in mm-hmm. the system. You know, ADS-B is wonderful today because we can see so much of the traffic. Not all of it, but we can see so much of the traffic that's out there right there on our screens. And so we have a better 3D image in our head of where everything is and where we are in relation and how people are speeding up, slowing down. For instance, I got to race Cirrus to the airport. They were doing an approach that was supposed to be a circle to land, and we were coming right to the airport because we were underneath the clouds already. And the answer was, the second he started to slow up to do his approach, the tower controller figured out that we weren't slowing up because we didn't need to slow up until we were on base. And he went, oh, wait, that RV-10's going to get here first. He can land first.
Sure.
And he put us as number one. That's the kind of stuff that air traffic controllers, if they understand airplanes, they can see that starting to happen.
Right, especially when they know the different models a little bit and know the performances.
Yeah. It's exciting in the moment because it's kind of fun when you're out there and you go, ooh, we're going to beat the Cirrus. It's a terrible, terrible thing to be an RV 10 owner because you're always setting yourself up, and they have a bigger engine. Yeah, they burn more gas.
It's worse for us, too, because our N number does end in Charlie Delta, and that makes everybody call us a Cirrus at the same time.
I can imagine that is true. Yeah, yeah, I can imagine. So do you have any great family fun trips planned this summer?
Actually, for the summer, we don't. We just got back from a Bahamas trip. So
oh, wonderful.
We kind of had our fun already.
Do you have any good advice for parents who've got some kids and are thinking maybe they want their kids to get in on the whole flying gig?
I guess the biggest advice I'd have would be that all you can do is demonstrate to them and let them experience it for themselves, but you can't force them or talk them into it. Not all of them will want to. My daughter here with me on my left, Colleen, doesn't right now want to learn how to fly, and that's fine with me. And, you know, really it's one of those things that you either have the passion to learn and do it, or you don't right now. And if you don't, you probably shouldn't. But if you do, you definitely should.
What do you think, Andrea, from the spouse perspective? Because I get that question. I'm also a flight instructor. I get the question all the time. Can you teach my wife to fly? I think that would make her happy in the airplane. What do we know that they're not picking up on?
You need to want to do it. You want to be able to fly that airplane. And if they have that desire, then it's going to come. It'll happen. And they'll enjoy it more, too. If it's something that they're being forced into as a spouse, it's going to be a lot of tension because they're not going to enjoy it, you know. And maybe there's something, too, that they'll be wanting to help out with, because we all know that managing the cockpit, there's lots of other things that can be done. So maybe they don't want to learn to fully land the plane, but they can help with radio work or they can help with navigation. So there's other ways that spouses can help out, you know. And for me, it was all of those pieces as well. And, you know, flying now with Danielle as a pilot, you know, it's enjoyable to be able to sit right seat when she's flying. And it was also a lot of fun when we went down to Florida and the Bahamas to be able to have it just be Colleen and myself just in the RV-14. So that was a good experience.
Yeah, I should note that when Andrea started out, she didn't have any interest in learning how to fly. It wasn't on her agenda. And then it became an interest in learning how to land so that, if something happened, she could do it. And even then, she didn't really have the interest right away to become a pilot. That grew in her. So it's just got to be something that either grows in you or doesn't grow in you. And if it does, it does. I'm still wondering if someday it might not grow in Colleen, but we'll see.
Colleen, tell us a little bit about what you think about being with this flying family.
Oh, it's so great. I get to experience so many things that the average student like me wouldn't be able to experience. I got to go to every state. It's great. And my parents, my dad can teach me to fly whenever I want to learn, if I want to learn. But there's no pressure for me to do that if I don't feel the desire to. And that's what I really like, because maybe someday I will want to learn to fly. But right now, it takes a lot of time, energy, and money to do that. And I don't have the will in me yet to do that.
Well, that's okay.
Yeah.
We can't tell you that we're not always going to kind of hope that grows in you.
Oh, I can tell that.
But at the same time, it's important to be yourself and mm-hmm. do things the way you want to do them in
yeah.
life.
And I know that my parents understand that completely.
Fantastic.
And part of me doesn't really want her to learn how to fly. Because
that's not true.
Because if she learned how to fly, all that's going to do is take away more of my stick time.
Well, Tim, Danielle, Colleen, and Andrea Olson, thank you so much for coming over to EAA Radio and telling your story. I think you're going to inspire a lot of families out there and give them some ideas about how to go about the process in a way that everybody ends up happy with the flying. I wish you blue skies and soft landings.
Thank you.
You bet. This is the family of Olson Flyers at EAA Radio.